This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. When I was there recently, I had a chance to dine at California's first and the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. The restaurant is inspired by the hit TV show and features a menu approved by the Michelin star celebrity chef, Gordon Ramsay himself. Hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2024.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over the world.
Hey, Cheyenne, how are you?
Hi, I'm great.
Thanks for coming on.
Of course. I'm so excited.
Me too. So what does it mean for you to be a Vietnamese today?
For me today, it just really means like the roots of where my parents came from, because they were the immigrants that came to America. I was actually born in California and I grew up in like a predominantly Asian neighborhood, but I also still was like 50% Viet and 50% white. So I always kind of had this like outside influence of white culture. And in like second grade, I hated my name, like Cheyenne. You know, it's not like an Emily or a Hannah.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had like kind of like an identity crisis. I was like, Mom, I don't like my name. I want to be called Emily. Like I wanted to Americanize myself in like second grade. But I grew up with like, you know, a predominantly Asian neighborhood. So it also grounded me where I knew like this is my roots and this is my culture. And the people around me are also supportive. So I think I'm really grateful to be surrounded by a lot of people who are just like me.
Wait, Cheyenne is not a Vietnamese name, right?
It's not, but it like, it made me feel different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Where did your mom and dad get that inspiration from?
My mom is like really inspired by Native Americans and she really loves like their work ethic and the culture. And she had like this huge book about Native Americans. And when she was pregnant with me, she was like, I love the name Cheyenne for her because she loved the way the tribe acted, how they used every single piece of like, you know, the animals that they would kill. They wouldn't waste any resources. She just really liked how sustainable they were.
That is a very cool story. Yeah, I never knew that about your name.
Yeah.
I thought it might have been like a Vietnamese, two Vietnamese names put together and then it just phonetically sounded like Cheyenne.
Oh, that would have been pretty cool. My mom's name is Anne. So some people
put that together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've known you for a majority part of your life. You're a little kid when you started acting, because I know your uncle Stefan. How old were you when you started acting?
I started acting when I was 7/8. I was in second grade. A lot of things happened in second grade for me. That's when my mom started taking me to LA for auditions.
Okay.
But I started musical theater when I was in kindergarten. And that's what kind of branched me out to go to LA to the second grade.
Your mom started taking you to LA based on your request or based on like she just felt the urge to kind of bring you up there?
Oh, it was my urge, definitely. If she had a choice to not have an actress daughter, I think she'd kind of take it. But ever since I watched like Disney Channel with my brothers after school, I would see Hannah Montana and point at the TV and I'd be like, Mom, like, I want to be Hannah Montana. I want to be her. But I had no idea that was acting. I thought that was real life, to be honest. Like when I was like in kindergarten, preschool, I thought TV was real life at the time. I just like looked at it and I was like, I want to do that. And she was like, oh gosh, I don't want to take her to LA. Like, we're in Orange County. Like, this is a far drive and it's like a lot of time. And she was like, okay, well, you need to learn how to read first because I don't want to read your scripts.
Wow.
Uh-huh. So then I was like, okay, I'm determined to be Hannah Montana. Whatever she's doing, I want to do that. So then I was really blessed to go to a kindergarten private school at the time. But first through now, I've gone to public school, but specifically kindergarten. I went to a private school. So at the age of 4, they taught me how to read. So then I started reading Diary of a Wimpy Kid, my very first chapter book. I read the whole thing through and through. And I showed my mom, I was like, Mom, I read this book. I can read now. And so then that's when she was like, okay, maybe I should put her into something.
So this is at 5 years old, you read The Diary of a Wimpy Kid?
Mm-hmm, like 4 or 5. I'm a year below everybody else in my class because I barely made like that cutoff date for your birthday. So I was 4 in kindergarten, 4 or 5.
So then how did she figure out where to take you?
So you get like your Monday envelopes home with like all these newsletters. So there's this thing called MyArt. And it's this musical theater program where they do plays where one season they'll do Snoopy and Woodstock. And then the next season they'll do Peter Pan or Alice in Wonderland. So my mom saw that and she was like, oh, well, maybe this is like a good way to see if, you know, I'm into it. Because at the time I was really shy. I had no friends. I didn't like talking to kids my age. I mean, I was okay at home. I talked to my parents. I would talk to like my older relatives. But the friends at my school, I didn't really have any. So she kind of saw it as like an outlook, maybe like me meeting new kids my age and stuff. So that was also another thing about myself.
You know, so many artists like comedians, you know, you find that they're very introverted and they don't really hang out and socialize much. You think it's kind of weird, right? Because you are in a business that you have to deal with people constantly. You're kind of like showing the world your energy, but then you don't want to be a part of interaction. Comedians, actors, many times we find out that they're very introverted people, other than producers or, you know, writers are very quiet and to themselves, actors and comedians. But what's unique, not unique, but what's interesting about your situation is like how early on that trait was there, but then you wanted to develop into this weird, like not weird, but this journey into becoming Hannah Montana. Well, Hannah, wanting to become Hannah Montana is the weird part. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I think it's really ironic because she lived this double life. You know, she was this pop superstar and then she would go to school and no one would know she's Hannah Montana.
Oh.
And like the older I got, the more I realized I was like, I turned into Hannah Montana. Like because I was still kind of shy, you know, getting into acting. But eventually I came out of my shell. I became more extroverted. I started talking to new people, making friends, having a friend group. But it was throughout the years type of thing. So when I was, you know, booking jobs, booking TV shows, commercials, when I was younger, I didn't tell anybody because it was like my thing. It was just like my little hobby that I loved to do that made me happy. But I didn't know like I'd be on TV that my teachers would see. So one day I'd just come into class and they'd be like, were you on that Pizza Hut commercial? And I was like, oh yeah, I am. And they're like, oh, well, I saw you last night when I was watching my show. And I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. And I just brushed it off because I was like, yeah, that's really cool, Rio. But they were like, my student's on TV.
That's trippy.
And so I was like, whoa, I am Hannah Montana. Like no one knew that I was like, you know, on TV. But and then I'd go to school and act like everything's normal.
But then at some point in your mind, you just got to be like, no, what I'm doing is different from what these other kids are doing, right? Like when did that kick in?
I think probably around middle school because they'd be like, you know, the eighth graders. So when I came into sixth grade, fifth grade, I did a commercial with Chris Paul for a Foot Locker. And around Orange County, a lot of Asians are really into basketball. They love Chris Paul. They just like love basketball in general. Like that's kind of like their sport that they are attracted to. So I come in sixth grade, you know, yes, I met Chris Paul, you know.
But did you know who that was?
Yes, I knew who that was, but my brothers were a lot more excited than, you know, I noticed.
Right, right.
And so I come into sixth grade. You know, I'm minding my own business. I forget that I even like did that for a second. And then some random eighth grader comes up to me and goes, you're that kid who did that commercial with Chris Paul. And I was like, oh yeah, I am. And they're like, that's so cool. And they were like, you know, hyping me up. And I was like, oh wow, like this is actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it finally dawned on you. Like, so that Chris Paul commercial is the one that dawned on you.
Yeah, because everybody knew who Chris Paul was. You know, everybody knows what Pizza Hut is. But like Chris Paul, it's like, how often do you get to meet him and work with him?
Mm-hmm. And so from that point on, like up to now, did that kind of like awareness from other kids follow you? Or did it just kind of like, it was just a flash in the pan? It just was like that one time and then it just kind of died down and you just became a regular student person again?
It kind of followed me a little bit. Also in sixth grade, they like, you know, we're like kids, we're like 11 and 12. They like to look me up on Safari. So they like to look up my name, just like Cheyenne Nguyen. And at the time I was like so embarrassed. And cause like I used to do like movie reviews for this place called Kids First. And I would go see movies before they premiere and I would do reviews on them on YouTube. So I have a bunch of like movie review YouTube videos on YouTube where you can look up my name and it'll be everywhere. But at the time I was like still kind of shy and kind of embarrassed. And my sixth grade science teacher literally screen shared her iPad to the screen of the classroom. Mm-hmm. Looked up my name and just started going through all the videos in front of the class and everybody. And I literally ran out of class and I cried.
Really?
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I was like in shock because it's like one thing, you know, friends here and there that are like looking you up. You're like, haha, so funny. Like, yeah, like I'm on, you know, YouTube.
Yeah.
But then my teacher showing the entire class, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's like an invasion of privacy almost, right?
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
Because it's public.
I know, it's on the internet. I should expect it. But when you're like 11 and 12 and your sixth grade science teacher is putting you on blast, it kind of like...
Mm-hmm. It's a rude awakening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely.
Did you confront... It was a woman teacher or a man teacher?
It was a woman teacher. And I told her, I was like, can I go outside? Like, I'm not comfortable with this. And she's like, yeah, go ahead.
And did you ever confront her and sit her down and be like, hey, that wasn't cool?
No, but I mean, it's in the past now. I've grown from it. Maybe if I like, you know, really thought about it, I would have told her. But I think at the time I was just too shy or like, yeah, I was just like, or I just didn't really feel comfortable enough to even tell her I was uncomfortable. I just asked, like, can I just go outside? Because like, I'm not comfortable with this. I think I did tell her I wasn't comfortable. And that's why I wanted to go outside. Because why else would I want to go outside while my like YouTube videos are on blast right now? But she still kept going. So.
Wow. You went back in the classroom and she kept rolling the tape.
I came back into the classroom when she stopped going through the videos. She was like, okay, that's enough.
Such a trippy thing. So
yeah.
your mom takes you to your first thing. Do you have a recollection of it?
Mm-hmm, I do. I was supposed to go to piano class down in Orange County. And so I'm there with my brother and I'm just sitting in the waiting room and I go, oh, when's my lesson? And the front receptionist lady goes, oh no, your mom's going to pick you up here. And I don't know what she's going to do, but she said that you don't have a lesson today. I was like, okay, weird. I'm supposed to play piano today, right? And so then my mom comes by and she's like, okay, Shai, let's go. And I'm like, where are we going? And she just doesn't tell me. And so we're like on the way to LA, but have no idea. Cause I've honestly don't remember a drive to LA. So this is like foreign, like land going up through the freeways, the 405s, like what the, and then we go and see this lady who gives me this like Fisher Price commercial script. And she's like, can you say these for me? And then I say the lines and I guess I killed it. And the lady was like, wow, like she's really great and stuff. And the mom's like, okay, like I'll think about enrolling her into the classes that you guys offer. And so then my mom enrolled me to the classes. They were acting and modeling classes where they would have agents come in and like be like scouters type of thing. So we'd have like a showcase every 3 to 6 months with agents coming in.
Yeah.
Where we would do monologues in front of them or like a little model walk fashion show type of thing. And so that's how I built and got like little agents here and there and start slowly getting into it by going to those acting classes every Saturday and then doing those showcases and then slowly auditioning. But it was a gradual transition into like the more big game, real stuff.
Now, when you say gradual, this was by design from the program, from the John Kaka program, or is it by design from your mom and saying, hey, we're going to take this slow? You know, was it thought out to go slow?
It was like the acting studio with their agents. It was never my mom. My mom was just there to support me and tried to just find the best things to help me get to like being, you know, the Hannah Montana I've always wanted to be. So the acting studios, they had the agents that would come in. And then if an agent liked me, you know, you would sign with them. And so then that's when I had like little jobs here and there. And then eventually I started booking like union jobs where I had to start, you know, becoming a SAG AFTRA actress. And then that's when I started getting, you know, a better agent to get me more union and national commercial jobs.
How old were you then when you started getting SAG jobs?
I would say around age 10. I think the show New Girl, I did that in fifth grade or fourth grade. And that was the show that where they made me go union.
Okay. So don't you have to get a voucher or a few vouchers to become a union?
Yeah. You have to work, I think like two union jobs in order to be, have to come union. So you have to do two jobs that are union. And then once you book your third union job, they're like, okay, you have to go union now. You cannot do any more non-union work.
And then at that point, you had two going into that third job? Or, okay.
Yeah, I had two.
Now, what does anything magically change from that world of, you know, acting as a young person to actually having a SAG card at 10? Did it change for you mentally? I know the money probably changed, right? But
yeah, you know, I've never really been in it for the money or the fame. So I tend not to look at those type of details. I'm still a minor. So my mom has like, you know, most of the, not control, but she's the one who deals with most of the paperwork and the one who has to make the phone calls to SAG and stuff. So I'm really appreciative of my mom because she is so understanding and she's not overbearing or anything. She's really just there to support me. She always runs every decision by me before she puts it on paper. So with the whole SAG and union thing, I was so young, I didn't really notice that how big of a deal that was. I know that adult actors, like their dream is to become union or SAG. But for me, I was really grateful that I have booked multiple shows where I was able to become a SAG actress by a young age. So I didn't really notice like a big difference, but me and my mom were so funny. Well, notice the difference in food. That's the catering services we notice. That was a big difference.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because if you're working non-union, the budgets are a lot lower. The food quality is different.
Actually, my very first commercial I booked, it was non-union for a Japanese company. And so with union, it's like they give you this big budget. And then whatever left over, like that's the leftover. You can't pay anybody more or anything. So with the leftover money that project had, they bought like multiple food trucks, a salad truck, a steak truck. It was like the best catering we've ever had, which was amazing. And since that was the first job I ever booked, the standards were very high for staff services.
That is so funny. But how old were you when you booked that first a gig?
I was 8. So once I think I was like 3 months into acting and I booked my first job, which was amazing.
Yeah. So you didn't really go until you were like 8 or 7.
Yeah. So 7 or 8 is when everything, like the ball started rolling.
Got it. Okay.
So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, the acting studio just kind of like gave us like a base of like what acting is. Like, this is the audition process and this is what a callback is. You know, they would just tell us like things that no one would really kind of tell you. And also the internet wasn't that big at the time. So you can't just look it up on Google at that.
Yeah. You know, traditionally there's all these horror stories. Like you go to the mall. Back in the day, people go to the mall and they there's somebody who will flag you down. They'll, oh, you look like you could be, you could model. They'll give you a card. And then you call the number. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, that happened to me before.
Okay, can you tell me about that? Because I've heard about it and I wanted to ask you, like, okay, well, what is the difference between that experience and like those people versus the legit people where you can actually go and actually make something yourself?
Yeah. I was already in acting when a mall scout scouted me. So the acting studio that I was a part of was not a scam at all. They actually helped amazing, and they did not promise that I'd be on a Disney Channel show or anything. They never, ever did that. And they never made us pay ridiculous amounts of money the way these mall scams do. So we've actually had a couple friends who did the mall scam because they knew I wasn't acting, right? And they would call us, they'd call me and my mom, and be like, hey, like, you know, this lady saw so-and-so at Target. The lady found me at Target one time. At Target, and, you know, they said that she's going to be the next Shake It Up with Zendaya and Bella Thorne. She's going to have a show like that. And we're spending, like, about $5,000 a week. Is that normal? And me and my mom are like, no, you should never, ever pay.
$5,000 a week.
Yeah, it was like a ridiculous amount of money.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was insane. And we're like, no, you should never, ever pay. For us, we only paid for the acting classes. And it was a very reasonable amount. No more than like $300, I think. And so like, that's when, you know, the acting class is okay. That's when you know it's legit. They're not charging you $1,000. But they thought that was normal. They're like, doesn't everybody do this? How else did they get on the show?
Wow.
And we told them, we're like, don't do it. You're not supposed to spend money like that. You're never, ever supposed to spend that much money on anything. Yeah. And they're like, no, but they're promising us. And we're just like, okay, well, we told you this is what Shy did. You know, it's not like everything has to be like what I did, but it's kind of just like, this is what most of the people do. And, you know, a lot of people who have fallen into these scams never really get a show. And they don't listen to us. As much as they call us, they still don't listen to what we say.
Oh, so there's like multiple people, multiple friends of your family that have gone through that?
Mm-hmm. They're more of like a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, there's been multiple people who have told us. And like when I tell people I'm an actress or like I'm acting, they go, oh, my friend is in that stuff too. Like they go to this workshop and they kind of explain just like the same mall scam. And I feel so bad, but I, you know, I try to tell them, but that's the best I can do.
You know, it speaks to the vanity of human beings, right?
Mm-hmm.
You hear of these stories back in the day, you know, the director walked by and, you know, we were at the Third Street Promenade, the director caught, you know, my eyes and, you know, pulled me out of the crowd. And, you know, I became, you know, famous because, you know, a casting agent pulled me out of the crowd and walking at the beach. And then, so people have this sort of like this myth that that is a possibility that you can walk inside of a mall or Target and get discovered. And then that whole 5,000 a week or whatever that perpetuates from this sort of like this vanity standpoint, right? You're like, you're so wanting the fame for your child or whatever, yeah, that you're willing to pay that crazy amount of money. And in actuality, what you're saying is, it's no different than just paying for piano lessons.
No, yeah, exactly.
Right?
That's exactly how it should be.
You pay for piano lessons, $300 a month or a week or whatever. You go in, they teach you how to do it, and they bring agents in. And if you get selected or whatever, they pick you up. And it's a very simple thing.
It is, but, you know, they tend to overcomplicate it. They listen to all the other mall scams because the amount of people that fall into it, you think like, oh, since these many people have done it, it's normal. That's fine. But it's really not.
No. But do you think that anything substantial actually does come from the mall scam? Like, you can't drag somebody for like all that money for months and months and months and not have anything come of it. I mean, do you think they have fake producers come on to the thing? How does this really perpetuate?
They have like you know, like oddball Disney stars come in, like the, oh, this guy from Kickin' It who played this character is coming in to see if we have what it takes. Or it's like, you know, it's really like random. Or, I mean, they'll probably go in a few auditions. I don't know exactly like those people's situations with the scams, but I know that they go on a few auditions, but eventually they tend to just break and then stop doing those mall scams because they don't have like that passion or drive anymore, or they think it's too hard, or they just kind of like, drift away from it, and then they eventually just stop doing that scam and stop acting in general.
What has kept you going through all these years? I mean, there couldn't be like, you're working constantly in the early years, right? It's far and few between, but what kept you going?
I think what kept me going is just that I loved it. And like ever since I was young, like my vision was always that like I would book a series regular or some breakout role and acting would be what I would be doing for the rest of my life. Like that is like what has always been in my vision. But the older I get, I'm booking a little less or auditions start to come a little slower. I start auditioning against 20-year-olds who are playing teenager roles. It gets a little harder. So that's when I started, I always thought about a plan B. I always thought like if I never have this big breakout role, if I never book a series regular where I'm working every day that I have to be homeschooled or something, I'm going to go to college but still act. And that's exactly what I am doing right now as a high school senior who I'm graduating like, 2021 this year. I've
You
also applied to colleges and, but everybody asks like, how come you don't apply up north or out of state? And I'm like, no, LA is my home. I want to be everywhere around LA.
Yeah, you have to stay local, right? In case there's well, there will be auditions, right? And you just stay close to the where the work is. Plan B, it's college, but is it the theater, like drama in college, or is it like accounting, in college?
A lot of people ask why I don't major in acting or film or theater. I would love to, but at the same time, I've always had the plan B of having a different major, but also something that I'm also interested in. So I would still love to do acting while I'm in college. So in college, I'd like to major in journalism and communications or public relations. I'd love to get into the field of broadcast journalism, which kind of mixes my best of both worlds
Yeah.
because broadcast journalism has a hint of acting, but also it has like the writing aspect that I love of it. So even though I'm not majoring in acting, I'm doing something that's somewhat related where I can get into the same business, but a different career path, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now you said something about you're at the age where you're still a teenager, but you're going up against 20-year-olds that are playing teenage roles, right? What do you think the difference is between sort of like, this is actually nothing to do with 20 and teenagers, but what do you think the difference in the experience of young actors versus older actors on set?
Definitely the on-set schooling is a big difference with the child labor laws. So when you're still in school, or if you have not had like a high school diploma or what they say, a CHESPE is the California exit exam. A lot of kids around high school, they will take the CHESPE, and that means it's like an equivalent to a high school diploma. So the CHESPE is equivalent to a high school diploma. So a lot of children, 17 to 14, depend or 17 to 15, they will take the CHESPE and then they will either exit out of high school. They will no longer do their public or private schooling, or they will stop their homeschool. And that means they have a high school diploma already at the age of 15 to 17, which means
Wow.
they can work as legal 18, which means you don't need an on-set teacher for schooling and you can work adult hours. So
Why
you have
did you
a
do
lot
that
of
ever?
teenagers. No, I did not. You have a lot of teenagers who do that though. Personally, I didn't do it because I was afraid like if I took that test, I pass, and this one year I hate high school, I am afraid I'm just going to use that weapon in my back pocket and then regret not going to high school anymore. And I'm totally okay with doing on-set schooling and everything. And as much as like my mom might say like, oh, they might have a leverage, that they can work in as adult. But I always like to think if they really wanted me, they would take me if even though I can work as a minor or not.
Did you ever come across that situation where they wanted to take you and, work as a minor and all that?
I'm pretty sure there has been a situation, but they still took me anyways. But I mean, the chess fee was sort of a big deal, but when I signed up to take the test, because I was going to, COVID hit. So that was my sign of saying, okay, it's not meant for me. I don't want this test in my back pocket type of thing.
Because that's like a major advantage, in my opinion. I mean, in my head, just thinking about it logically. Like, if I was 15, I would take the chess fee if I knew I could pass, so I don't have to go to school ever again, right?
So that's where my Hannah Montana factor comes in again, where so I go to a public high school and I tried to go to every homecoming, every dance, every high school activity I can do, because in the back of my mind, it was always, what if you book that series regular? What if you book that feature film and you have to stop school? What if you'll never get those memories or chances to have a normal high school experience again? So that's why I didn't want to leave high school if I didn't have to.
Looking back, do you think that was the right decision?
I think so. Even though you would pass the CHESPE exit exam, you don't have to use it and say, you don't have to go, okay, since I passed it, you need to stop high school. It's more of just like you can use it when you want to, like, but once you turn that test in, you can never go back to your high school type of
Oh,
thing.
really?
Yeah, so say I pass it. Say I'm 15, I'm a sophomore in high school. I pass the CHESPE exit exam. And I don't turn it into my school. I can still stay at my school. I can be normal, go to school like normal. But then if I look at my exit exam and I go, okay, I don't want to go to school anymore. I'm done. Once I turn it in, I can never reverse it. I can never go back to my high school again because I'm done.
Wow, these really interesting rules. But if you did, in fact, go through with it, right? And you passed, but you didn't turn it in, is it still a legal, sort of a legal pass that says, oh, well, I passed it, but I didn't turn it in, and you would still get off the hook without having to be homeschooled on set? Or it has to be like you have to legally turn it in officially to make it like count so you don't have to go to school on
Yeah,
set.
I think that was one of my major factors of why I didn't want to take it. I think you have to turn it in, but there's probably some type of loophole. I'm not exactly sure because I never went through with it or tried to, cheat the system or anything. So I don't know the exact details of like how turning it in or on your work permit or anything like that. I wish I had the answers, but I don't because I never actually went through with it and, knew the little details I can get through.
Now, you just talked about like not missing homecoming, and you have this whole sort of universe, this friends at school, right? But you probably also have like friends out of school in the business, right? Is there a difference between sort of the maturity level of friends on the outside and friends on the inside?
Major difference. Not maturity wise. I think my friends are very mature. I kind of attract who, I am. But with the acting friends or LA friends that I have, it's really different. I think how they say like, oh, everybody in LA is fake or blah blah blah, but I think that my acting friends are very true to themselves and they're very grounded, but at the same time, like, you'll be friends with somebody that you worked on a job with years ago. You'll semi keep in touch, but then once they turn big or things like that, they start acting a little different. They stop responding to your texts. They stop, telling you little details and things like that. So I think with LA acting friends, they definitely, drift apart and come and go a lot quicker than, my Orange County regular school friends, because they are, working on set for 8 hours plus a day, working on a movie, working on a show. They have a lot more, not responsibility, but a lot more real world things going on that they have to do at a young age. So, I mean, I don't blame them for not responding or things like that, but I can see that like when certain people they get a little bit bigger, they tend to like, let go of the younger friends that aren't as big anymore.
I mean, it makes sense. It's just our time on Earth is limited, and once you start swimming in bigger waters, you have bigger friends that demand bigger, more big, commitments from you as a friend. Yeah. This whole idea of like LA being fake, right? I grew up in LA. I grew up in Koreatown, and I deal with that sort of like that that kind of that trope, that idea of people from LA being fake, but
I like can't trust anybody.
Yeah, but it's not like that. It's really how could I put it? I think people are moving so quickly that the relationships might be shallow for the most part. They're generally shallow until you start really getting close to people. And then you still have not penetrated that lower level of like that friendship. And then as you get deeper, then you get to like your uncle and my level, right? Like we got really close and we started spending a lot of time together. And then that doesn't regress back to being fake. You know, once you hit that level with people in show business where you're like, basically so tight with each other like brothers, then it doesn't go back to like if your uncle blew up or if I blew up, you know, we're still gonna always be able to call each other, make fun of each other. Exactly. Yeah, but so, LA does have, yeah.
Yeah, I just think that with LA, the city's moving so fast, there's so many things going on. They have so many auditions, they have so many jobs, they're like meet and greets or interviews that, you know, it's hard to keep up with like some of the friends that you that kind of slip by, and I don't blame them at all. But I mean, you know, a couple of friends, like you'll see them at the auditions a lot. That's also a thing with like acting. When you're in the same age group or the same ethnicity, you always get sent out for the same roles. So you always get to see each other at the same audition. So you kind of like build this little bond where it's like, hey, like I'm seeing you at an audition. Like, how are you? Like, what's up with school and stuff? But then like, once you leave that waiting room, it's kind of like you don't talk again until you see each other at the waiting room again.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not like adults where you can get each other's phone numbers and hang out with your gal pal and just drive some more and have coffee and then catch up about and have shop talk. Right.
Yeah, like our moms are taking us to the audition. We have homework to do. They have jobs to do. And also, like I'm in Orange County. There's some girls that come from San Diego, Las Vegas, you know, like they got to go home right after this audition. They can't just stay and have a coffee because not everybody lives around LA who's in acting.
Yeah, wow, that's intense thinking about it. You know, your mom has a huge role in your life and in the last few years. What did, I mean, you kind of have to have a full-time, not have a full-time job to be able to bring your child to these auditions, right?
This is where she becomes like Wonder Woman. She just like amazes me and I'm so grateful for her because when I first started in second grade, she was still a full-time accountant for the state of New Jersey. She had a full-time job. She's also a real estate agent. So she not only has her full-time job with her 9 to 5, but she also is a real estate agent who's showing houses after 5 p.m. So with adding on top of driving your daughter to and from LA for an audition that will last 3 minutes, she manages time to still turn in her work on time, show those houses to her friends, put in that offer. And it just like amazed me because everybody would think like, oh, aren't you like a stay-at-home mom? Like, how else do you take her to LA all the time? She's like, no, I work multiple jobs. I just have to find my time and like manage it and really have like, she just has like this amazing work ethic that like I admire. I just don't know how she does it. Yeah. But now she's retired ever since my sophomore year. So she stayed at that accounting job for over 30 years. She started really young. So she got to retire early. And so she's like so grateful and blessed for it. Her hard work really paid off with her retiring early. So now she focuses more on real estate. And whenever I need to go to LA, she will take me. And it's a lot less stressful in her now.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still like me, it's myself is already a full-time job, let alone my two other older brothers that were still in the mix until I was in eighth grade.
Now, I'm going to ask a personal question between you and your mom, but you can say, hey, that's like, or you can just figure out a way to answer. But okay, so when you start young, right, like 7, 8, 9 years old, you start getting paid and all of that, you're probably not old enough to kind of think about like the way the money works, right?
But then,
is there a time where like the switch goes off and you're just like, How much is mom making? How much am I making? Do you guys have to sit down and have a conversation about, hey, mom, how much are you making off me? And like, is there an official time where you guys both sit down and go, hey, let's talk about money?
I think that we have little conversations here and there, but I know my mom does not take any of my money. My mom only, she manages my finances. She's an accountant. She like knows how to do the taxes. She knows how to like run a corporation with all these little nitty gritty like details that only accountants or people with taxes know. So I think I'm very blessed to have a mother who knows accounting, who knows taxes, who knows the way the corporate world works. And so she never does anything to try to get more money out of me or try to even take my money. She honestly, she invests it into like real estate and stocks or just things that will help me in the future. And she's so selfless. She doesn't think about herself when it comes to my finances. She only thinks about what is going to help me now and in the future. And I think I'm really grateful to have a mom who doesn't have anything against me or tries to like work against me. She's only there for me.
Yeah, you are blessed. You're very blessed.
I'm really
Growing
blessed to
up
have
as an,
her.
it's a funny thing, but it's a real thing in Hollywood with child actors. We talked earlier about the whole Britney Spears thing.
Yeah.
It's a real thing and it happens. I'm sure it happens a lot. I mean, I think people like you and your mother, the relationship that you have is very rare, actually.
It is. I'm just so grateful and blessed. I don't know. I wouldn't even be in acting. I wouldn't even be comfortable talking to you today or even be here today without her pushing me and taking me to LA and giving me that next big step that I needed.
Yeah, that whole Britney thing and the sort of entitlement that a parent might feel when they give so much during the child's early years, it's maybe in the Vietnamese culture is just very different. My mom is like your mother. She's just very, very, very giving. It's like infinite amount of love. It just keeps coming. And I think it's different when at 18, you're expected to get the hell out in American family, like a white American family, right? It's like different parameters.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm also really blessed to be Asian as well. Although like a lot of, acting opportunities don't really come by as often, I'm really grateful for when they do book me, when they do cast me, 'cause I've also dealt with the thing where it's like every Asian girl I see on TV or in a movie, they have bangs, or they have like more, they have smaller eyes than me. I like in the beginning when I started acting, before like being more PC was like a thing, they really liked me because I was racially ambiguous. I can pass off as Mexican or mixed race or Asian. And so they really liked that. But then that also came with the downside of me not looking Asian enough, me not looking Mexican enough. Even though I am not Mexican, they did put, like, back then, agents did cast me out and put me into roles where they would ask for Hispanic. And, now it's not okay, obviously. And I totally understand why. And I honestly felt really weird doing so, posing as another race. But back then, that's why they liked me. But then in the long run, it had my downsides too, because I didn't look like the Asian that Hollywood wanted.
Yeah. For better, for worse, or for better, or for worse. I mean,
Or
because I would think, like, all right, it's acting, right? And okay, if you're, and I'm just playing devil's advocate. I'm not believing anything I'm saying right now, okay? I'm just taking a position just so we can kind of have this discussion. If you're getting work as a Mexican, right? You're acting. It plays the part, it fulfills the part. What is wrong with that?
I mean, I think that if it's like play, I think if it's you're lying. I know that there is like this situation where there's this actress and she lied and said she was Hispanic and that's how she got more Hispanic roles. And I think that's when it's wrong. I think when you're posing as something that you're really not, and you can't control what your agent's sending you out on. You can't control what the casting director wants to book you for. So I think that if you're going to be mad about a person who is playing a different race, then I think you should be more mad about the root of the problem of the person who's choosing a person who's not of that race to play that role. Because any actor will take any chance, any audition that they can take, because it's a chance to achieve their dream. What if that role yeah. is the role that will break you out and become a star? So the actor is just willing to do anything what it takes. And it's the casting director that chooses if they want to choose a person who's not Hispanic or choose a person who's not Asian.
You know, as I'm talking to you all these minutes, you know, what the thought that comes to my mind is this. People who come into this business and they're just like fiery and they just want to like become a star. They just want success. Those people crash and burn very quickly. Right.
Yeah.
It's the longevity of it's people who sort of like take a very like craftswoman approach where you're here to get better every day and then you let the dice roll. Right? Is that sort of your mentality?
Yeah, I think it also happens more in adults, I would say. Mm. I'm really grateful to come to the business when I was younger, where I'm not self-conscious. I don't think, oh, how does my hair look? Or are my eyes big enough to play this fashion role? Yeah, I grew into it. And the older I got, the more I noticed the subtle racism that I was going through. But at that time, I was just doing me. Yeah. I just was acting like me. I was having fun. I wasn't thinking about, I wonder what this person in front of me is thinking right now, even though this person might determine and make or break my future type of thing. I was never thinking like that. I was just going to the casting room and just doing me and doing my performance, doing my acting. And I was just in my zone. I was in my element. I was not thinking about outside factors. Oh, did they like that line? Oh, I should have said it differently that time.
Wait a minute. So do you do that now? Do you think about, are you more self-conscious now?
I think that I'm definitely a little bit more self-conscious, but since I always went into acting and I never cared about what people thought or anything, I think from an outside, like, oh, I wonder if that girl likes my outfit. Like, I don't think that way. But when I go into a casting room, I'll be a little bit more nervous than I was when I was younger, but I would still keep the same mentality. Like, you're good enough. Like, as long as you try your best, that is enough. Like, you've done enough. That's the best you can do. It's okay. And if it's meant to be, it'll be meant to be.
Yeah, because there's so many factors about how you're picked, right? From the director is looking for a certain, I don't mean skin color, but they're looking for like, it's a palette. And there's so many things about the paint texture that they're looking for. And just because you're not a green one, the red one, and then they're just picking from a palette to fit whatever their vision is, right?
Yeah. I think it's also great that I'm blessed to have booked a job every year. Even though it might just be one job that one year, I'm still blessed to just have like a consistent, like ongoing role where like I might feel down a couple days, a couple auditions, but then once I book that one role, it just reminds me like all that hard work was really worth it because look where I am again today. So it might be hard for other people who haven't been booking roles or anything, how they can just be beaten down and start getting a lot more self-conscious, start overthinking a lot more. It's like, how come I haven't booked anything in years? Like, what am I doing wrong? But it might be something they do. But at the same time, all these casting directors, directors, and producers have this specific vision in their mind that it's not you. Mm. It's just their vision that you don't fit yet.
And you can't see it. It's in their head.
Yep.
Or it's on their producing team and they talk about certain things. And I've sat on that side before too. I've sat in the casting side with the directors and, you know, after somebody comes up, you all turn to each other and you're like, that's the person. That's the one.
It's the vision.
It's the vision. Yeah. And there's no rhyme or there's really no rhyme or reason. And then you ask them, you know, how much training or schooling they've had in acting, zero. It's just the feel. It's just the vibe. When you are going through high school now and you have friends, you know, do your friends sort of like, does it get kind of imposing? Do they get in that space where they'll ask questions or they wonder about what you do, or they just sort of break this sort of like bearing between, you know, in the relationship? Do they cross the line ever? Or
I think when I was younger, I definitely kind of didn't know how to pick and choose my friends. But the older I got, the more I realized who's real, who's fake. What do I like about this person? What do I see in this person? Do they have the same mindset, the same goals that like we are both trying to achieve towards? So my friends now in high school, I'm very blessed to have a great like group of friends. Some of them I actually grew up with since middle school. So they were kind of there when the whole awkward phase, random jobs, people coming up to me type of thing. So they kind of grew up with me with the acting. So they kind of like already were over it. It was cool in the beginning type of thing. And then now it's kind of just like, yeah, like that's my friend Cheyenne. Like she's in that like show, like pretty cool. But they're not like, oh, I'm only friends with her because she's in a show. Because one, I'm not that big to use my name like that. Yeah. And two, they've just grown with me. And it's sort of like just a part of me now. So it's nothing they see any different. It's just like my career path. It's like, oh, I'm going to be friends with this person because they're a doctor.
Yeah.
But no, they don't do that with me because I'm like an actress, because it's just like my occupation. In high school, I definitely found a good another group of friends, and they thought it was also cool at first. And then when I just like talk about it casually and stuff, they'll ask me questions here and there, like, oh, so like, how does that work? And I'll tell them about the waiting room, the sign-in sheet, the casting director, the sides that my agent will send me. And I've talked to my friends about this a couple of times, and they're just like, yeah, like when you explain it, I like really try to understand, but then sometimes I just don't get it. And like, that's okay, because it's your life and it's like a different job that I'm not understanding. But I try to understand it, and it's really interesting, but sometimes I just don't get it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's all right too, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's totally okay. Cause like sometimes you'll talk about your job and sometimes I just don't get it. So they don't really find it as anything super different. They just think it's like, you know, something kind of cooler than your average job.
Yeah. You know, you talked about earlier about, you know, getting big, right? Your name getting big. Is that a product of the more you audition, the bigger you get, or not that many auditions are happening, so you just try to go to every one of them? Like, is it a volume game? Like, the more you go, the more you'll grow? Or is it there's only a limited amount of spaces and seats for the game, and you just try to get in where you fit in?
I think it's kind of both. I think in the beginning, when I got a bunch of auditions, it was kind of just like, I never thought about getting big. I just really just wanted a series regular or a feature film to just work consistently. Cause most of the jobs that I book, I only work 1 to 5 days, but my dream is to work every single day, you know? And so that's like my personal definition of getting big, where I'm getting big, like growing with myself and working as much as I want, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So that's my definition of getting big. It's not to be like, you know, a superstar or anything. If that comes with it, great. But yeah, for me, what makes me happy is that I'm working every day. That's what makes me happy. That's my dream and my goal.
Now,
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Is it a function of like, there's so many auditions out there, you just got to go to a lot, or there's only a limited amount and you just kind of have to go with whatever is presented to you?
Oh yeah. Okay. So I think back then that was what it was, when you got so many auditions, like just go, go, go. Like it's every opportunity, take every chance you can get, because there's so many auditions that would flow through. Ever since the pandemic and me getting a little bit older, looking a little older, auditions start to flow less. Plus a pandemic.
Yeah.
A little bit less projects and shows are rolling right now, you know? So now it's more of like, take in every audition. Although I do take every audition that I've ever gotten before, now it's kind of like, okay, an audition once a week, let's focus every single word. Let's look at it. With the auditions that would come in like, you know, waves and stuff, I would do the same thing. But at the same time, my brain was going a million miles a minute, because I have 5 auditions that I've got to do in the next 2 days. So yeah.
Go ahead. You think what?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Can you go through the steps of like the minute you get a call, or you get your agent or manager letting you know, hey, there's an audition, all the way up to wrap, like the whole process?
Okay. I think with theatrical, like shows and movies, there's a different process for each role. So you have a series regular, your reoccurring star, your guest star, and your co-star. So there's four different processes for those four different roles. So would you want to go through the series regular one, the recurring role, the guest star, or the co-star process? Because they're both kind of similar, but the series regular goes through a lot more steps. Then the recurring goes through maybe 2/3 of those steps. Guest stars and co-stars would go through 1/3 of the steps that a series regular star would have to go through.
I had no idea. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that all of those categories have a different audition, a different selection process?
Yeah, so kind of. So everybody goes through an audition. Okay. All those four type of positions, they all go through one audition. Series regular, and it also depends on the casting director and the casting studio itself on how they want to do their own process. But speaking by like general speaking, you'll go into an audition as a series regular. You'll audition for the series regular role. The casting director is auditioning you. They like you. They'll call you in for a callback. The callback consists of the producers, the directors, maybe the writers, and the casting director that called you back in. They like you. Everybody kind of has to like you. Every single director, producer, writer. Unless, you know, there's some type of different political power over another. Usually a lot of them have to come into agreement on the one person that they want. So then once you audition for the callback, then they'll put you in, you know, lower down the list of the auditionees to like maybe 15 or 10. Then they'll put you into like a second callback or maybe a chemistry read with the other characters mm-hmm. that they want you to be with as the, those series regular roles. And then they'll see the chemistry read. And at the chemistry read, you know, I'm my own role. And then I have 2 or 3 other girls that are auditioning for the same role as me. And then the same for all the other characters that I will be interacting with. Then those producers, directors, writers, they will kind of just like play with you like cards and see like, oh, I like this girl with that guy. And then let's put in this girl with this one. They'll shove you into the group, have you do those scenes, see if they kind of like it. And like, you know, that guy's kind of off in that group. Let's put in this guy instead. So that's the chemistry read. And then eventually, like usually after the chemistry read is when they will, after that, they will book those series regular roles to see, because they like to want, they want to see how all the actors interact with each other, how it would look like on the screen with all 5 of the main characters together. So that's what the series regular.
How many times, how often have you gotten to the chemistry read?
I would say about 3 or 4 times. Yeah. It's very interesting to see that the girls that I go against, because there's so many different ranges. I'm 4'9", 4'10". I'm a really small Vietnamese Asian girl. And then I would go against this like 5'8" Asian girl. And we're going against the same role. And then, you know, the 5'8" girl actually booked it. And I'm very happy for her. But it was just really crazy to see like the difference between the two and how the 5'8" girl just looked and felt better to the directors and stuff than me.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it had nothing to do with height either.
You never know. We will never know unless you want to hunt down the producer and
talk to them.
Yeah, but it's whatever happens. There's so many projects out in the universe. There's one bound to be for you.
Yeah. But that's like on the TV side, right? The chemistry or is that?
I think also, I haven't really gone through that big of a callback and audition process for feature films though. That's one thing that I'm kind of lacking in my department is the feature film area. But that's for like TV shows. I'm not exactly sure about movies, like feature films. I booked this one Hallmark movie though. Like, you know, those little Hallmark lovey-dovey movies. We never had a chemistry read or anything. They just individually booked each girl. So I never had to go in and see all the other girls that I worked with.
But you know, I mean, you speak to me as a full-blown adult, right? The way you think, the way you conduct yourself. But if you really think about it, you still have a long way to go, mm-hmm. right? Because you think about it, there's so many people who come out of college and then they go to Hollywood and then they try to get into the business, right? And then, you know, they eventually get a series or whatever. You're like not even at the age where people graduate from college and then go into Hollywood. You're like way before that, and you're still so very young, but you have like this firm grip of the way it works already. So it's just a matter of, and really, the way I look at it for you is just a matter of time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Everything that I've learned and accepted and grown from is my experiences that I've learned for the past 10 years.
Yeah, it's just hanging in there long enough to have it. Now, have you ever thought of writing or producing or directing projects?
I've honestly thought about screenwriting and maybe directing just because of like the representation that we have in the media. I'm just tired of the stereotypical Asian names for the Asian characters or the stereotypical characters that they would cast Asians for. The doctor, the scientist, or just like, it's just very stereotypical, but it's like Asians are so much more than that. Like I want to cast a girl without bangs. You know, like I've also thought, yeah, I've definitely thought about like maybe like casting or maybe even being like an agent in the future. I'll probably look into that when I'm older because like those are definitely career paths that I really like. And I that's like one of the ways that I can help change the business and form it better and different. Because as an actress, I can try and do as much as I can, but the power is in the casting directors, the directors, the producers. If I'm one of those people in that position, I can actually bring the real change that people have been asking for.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about somebody who is very near and dear to both of us. Your Uncle Stefan. I met him in my younger, and I talk about him all the time. I bring his name up in these episodes as much as I can because I don't want anybody to ever forget him. And I just want everybody to know what a wonderful effect he had on all of us. And I don't know, I think your mom might know, but you don't probably are aware, you're probably not aware of how much he affected his group of friends and what a indelible mark he left on all of us. How close were you to him?
I was close. I think I was one of the closest to him out of all the nieces because we were in the same business.
Yeah.
Without him, he was honestly the big push to tell my mom to put me into acting. He was the big push because, you know, he's a director. He's in LA. He's in the business. He knows how things work. He knows how things goes. He sees all these actors and actresses. And to see his little niece want to be an actress and he saw my potential, he vouched for me because my mom, she was a little hesitant. She's like, the time, like, I don't have time, Stefan. Or it's just like, this is so much work. And then you'll have like my old school aunt and uncles be like, she's going to turn into a drug addict. She's going to be a child actress and do coke. Oh my God. She's going to go crazy. She's not going to do school. And Uncle Stefan's like, no, like she's not going to be like that. Like I know who she is and who she is. And like, it's going to be the people she surrounds herself with. That's how she'll turn into that. It's not her being in acting. It's the people around it. And he knew like, I wasn't going to turn into that or I wasn't going to be that. Or I wasn't going to fall into that crowd. He saw like the hope and the potential that I had. And he told my mom, like, just do it. Because my mom really took his like, you know, opinion to consideration because there's nobody else in my family that's in the business besides him or me.
When you look at him or when you did from when you were growing up until his passing, did you look at him and go, like, it was a respectful, like, yes, uncle, no, uncle. He was like, not strict, but did you view him as an adult or how did you feel about him?
I viewed him as an adult. He was my like, what is it? He was like 6'3", right? In my house, he'd have to like bend down everywhere because our house is like kind of like shorter. The ceilings are a little shorter. So I definitely saw him as an adult. I am 4'9". He is 6'3". Yeah. He's bending over on my house. Like, obviously I'm going to be like, yes, Uncle Stefan. But he also, like my parents, they both have full-time jobs. So when I had an audition last minute, like they would call him up and be like, hey, Stefan, like, I know you're going up to LA today. Do you think you can take Shy to this audition? Wow. And you're like, oh yeah, of course. And, you know, Uncle Stefan drove me to that audition. You know, he drove me to a couple auditions. He took me, you know, to certain things I needed to do in LA, like maybe pick up my work permit. He was there with me, you know, because he had to take me. He stepped in, you know, he was still supportive. Even though he convinced my mom to put me into acting, he was still there and showed his support by acts of services, by, you know, helping them out, by taking me to the places I needed to go.
He was a big goofball.
He was. I mean, I see all my uncles with respect and as them as an adult, but Uncle Stefan was definitely, you know, the uncle that like, he just kind of understood what I was going through compared to any other uncle that I had, because he's in it too. He knows.
Special guy. Very special guy. He and I went up to Big Bear one Christmas and we were supposed to go on a writing trip. It was just me and him. We go up on a Friday, leave on a Sunday, and we're supposed to like write this this script that we had been talking about. And we get there and I'm like trying to bust on my laptop and work. And then he's like, no, man, let's. And then there was like this TV show that he just got hooked into in the hotel room, and he just watched the whole show the whole weekend, and we did no work.
No, I love it. I think that's probably where I get it from, where it's like when you get like those bursts of motivation, it'll happen.
Yeah.
But when you're just not feeling it, you just got to go with what you want to do, and the inspiration will just come to you when it needs to.
That's totally him. He was like, man, I'm just, man, let's just watch TV. And we drank like cheap wine, and this is Big Bear.
So. I definitely think that's where I get like my chillax.
Yeah,
like
chillax.
Because my parents, they're not uptight, but they're very like, you gotta be on time. You gotta be early. You gotta do this. You can't do that. Like, you need to do this now. But then I'm like, relax. Like, it will happen. I'll do it. It's just right now is not the time. And I think that's where Uncle Stefan's influence really hit me.
He was definitely that kind of guy. It was on a different time. I was late, you know.
He's on island time.
Say it again?
He's on island time.
Yeah, total island time, and big smoker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling my mom, because like I was like, I'm a night owl. I get really like inspired or productive at night. It was like almost 1 a.m. and I was like really hyper at the time. I had like a bunch of energy, and my mom goes like, you're crazy. And I go, well, what art? Have you met an artist who isn't crazy? Yeah. Have you met an artist who's normal? If I was normal, yeah. I don't think I'd have this personality.
Yeah, it's very true. Your uncle was definitely an artist every step of the way. And he brought everybody together. You know, he did. He brought everybody together from the early days. He just included everybody, just pulled everybody up, you know, producing credits, you know, writing credits, and guys to work the cameras. He brought all of his friends that became somebody in the industry later on, you know. In Vietnam, he's, you know, he knows everybody, he knew everybody. And we lost an amazing human being.
Yeah. What they say is that legends die young.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really heartbreaking how he was taken away so fast. And like, sometimes I still cry about it today. Cause like when I'm on set, I feel him.
Yeah.
Like whenever I book a job, I'm like, he's watching after me. Like he did this.
Yeah.
But also like, I think what really inspired me too, is that, you know, he's an artist. When I went to Vietnam and I visited this orphan that I sponsor for like her school supplies and her food, because I've always felt empathy, and if I have the privilege to help other people, I'm going to do it. So I went to Vietnam to go meet her, and Uncle Stefan really just showed me that like, you can make art out of anything. He made like a little video documentary about me meeting my like, you know, sponsored sister orphan. So we met up in Vietnam, and like, I did like my little voiceovers upstairs in my brother's room in America. And then we would go and meet up in Vietnam to go see her. And he would like film me and her. And like, it just came so natural. And he just found art in everything that we did. And that really inspired me.
He did. He found art in everything. And he had a very close connection with orphans. I don't know why. Very close connection. His first movie, On the Sparrow, was centered around an orphanage and orphan kids.
I think like, you know, growing up without, you know, his father figure and stuff, and then my grandma having to work hard to support 8 kids, he kind of felt like an orphan, I can say. You know, it's like, you know, he's kind of alone, and that's where my mom kind of comes in as a mother figure. And so when my Uncle Stefan passed away, my mom felt like she lost a child. He really did, because
it's funny, but it's so true.
It's true, because, you know, my grandma, she was out, and, you know, she's doing her own thing.
Yeah.
And my mom, you know, she has to take care of her younger siblings because who else is going to take care of them? Like with Uncle Gene, Uncle Stefan, Uncle Albert, those are like the three youngest. And so she treated them and took them under her wing like they were their sons. And so what losing Stefan hit her hard because that was basically her son.
Yeah, I don't mean to laugh, but I laugh because I know your mom and how funny she is and how she truly treated Stefan like Stefan was her son, not a younger brother.
Yeah.
Stefan was older than I am. And she, you know, she treated him like,
It's crazy. And I think it's also really funny, like speaking of Uncle Stefan again, you know, and Uncle Albert too. Uncle Stefan and Uncle Albert, they look full white. They do not look half Vietnamese at all. Their height above 6 feet, their hair, Uncle Stefan had no hair. Uncle Albert had jet black hair, but he looked all white. He looked like a, you know, a party rock and roller. And so there was this one day I just get sick randomly in elementary school. I just would always have like random issues. And my parents working full-time jobs, they can't just pick up and go and pick me up from school. So they're like, Stefan, can you pick up Cheyenne? She threw up again. And he's like, oh, okay, like right on. And so he'll pick me up. But the 6'3" bald white dude picking up, you know, me.
Girl, yeah.
The front office ladies are like, do you know who he is? And I go, yeah, that's my Uncle Stefan. He's my uncle. And I just found no like wrong in it because I was like, he's my uncle. Like, why are you asking me that? But now looking back, I'm like, that looks like weird.
Really sketchy, right?
Yeah.
and it's not like he's just like this tall white guy that's like clean shaven. He's like stubbles everywhere. And he looks like he just woke up out of his car and came to pick
you up. His shirt got a little sweat stain on it. And he's picking up this 8-year-old girl because she threw up in class. Like,
sweat stain, little sweat stain. Big sweat stain with holes in it. Kind of so classic.
Picking his little niece up from school because she decided to get sick randomly. Oh, man.
Now, when was the first time you went back to Vietnam?
I only went to Vietnam, back to Vietnam once. Oh, that was really? 2016. Summer of 2016 is when I went back to Vietnam. Yeah. And so that was kind of like when he was transitioning to fully live in Vietnam at the time. Huh?
What did you think of Vietnam when you first got there?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Yeah. I loved the food, the fruits, you know, the people, not the nicest, but my family was so welcoming and nice and just like, seeing the people that my parents have always talked about from like their childhood or when they went back to Vietnam around 1995 for about a year or two. Cause my mom, like she was training people at KPMG on how to accountant and stuff. So they lived there for about 2 years. So when they like went to America, they still kind of kept ties with like their Vietnamese friends and family, but then going back in 1995 really just made that bond stronger where the connection and the communication was a lot easier. So they still had really close ties with the same people. So then us coming to Vietnam in 2016, it just felt like a family reunion.
Wow.
Yeah, and because they were still connected and they met new people in that 1995 trip.
Did you get to hang out with Uncle Stefan at all?
I did. I got to hang out with him when we did the little orphanage video and stuff. And then, I think he came back from Vietnam. So we did our trip in Vietnam and Thailand in 2016 in the summer. And then when we came back, he was like, okay, like I'm coming back to America in about 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, I'm going to stop by the house and then we can do your voiceover for like, you know, the audio on top of the video I made. And so not only did we meet in Vietnam in 2016 when he was transitioning to live there, but then he also came back to America a little bit after we came back to America as well. So we also saw him then too.
Do you ever think that you'll be doing any work, any entertainment work in Vietnam? You ever have hopes of it or dreams of it? Thoughts of it?
I never had hopes and dreams of like Vietnamese entertainment industry. Maybe because I don't speak Vietnamese. I'm trying to get into it again. I used to speak it when I was younger. And then this is the biggest regret I could say is that when I was younger, I was like, I don't want to speak Vietnamese. This sounds funny.
Yeah.
And then I just lost it.
I'm going to tell you a little story.
Yeah.
This morning, oh, it's a quick story, little story. This morning, I did an episode with an actor in Vietnam named Lam Vi Se, and he is a Cambodian, Laotian Vietnamese man, and he grew up in Germany, but his parents, the mother was Vietnamese, father was Laotian, but the mother grew up in Laos and married the father and had Lam, and he has a Vietnamese name, Lam.
Or, yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's his, he goes by that, but in Vietnam, he goes by that. So we were talking about, he's, you know, he's an actor and he's been there for 10 years. And I was like, you know, we had this long conversation about, wait a minute. And this is why I had him on the show, because I was like tripping out. You're German, you're Laotian, your mother is Laotian probably by being there for so long, but culturally everybody's Laotian. And then now he's German Laotian, right?
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing in Vietnam living there? Yeah. So we went into this whole conversation about, like, he got to Vietnam because he met somebody at a film festival in Germany, got to Vietnam for like on vacation. And one of the directors, like a Stefan, right? Like met him at a film festival and said to him, you know what? Now that you're here, I'm going to shoot this film. And I think it's perfect that you're in it. He's like, what? I don't speak the language at all. He goes, the only time anybody's ever talked to me in Vietnamese is when my mom yells at me and calls me my name and whatever. Right? And then he goes, but they put me in it. I started speaking German or just moving my mouth in English or whatever. And then they would dub the voice. He did that for the first like few years. And then he took Vietnamese classes, but the amount of Vietnamese that you're exposed to and you know is worlds more than Lam.
Yeah.
And he made it a career and he's still there acting and doing Vietnamese. So let that be an inspiration, right?
I never thought about that outlook.
Crazy, crazy. Your ears are already adjusted for if you ever go to Vietnam, because you grew up with it in the house with your parents and grandparents. Yeah. Parent maybe, and that guy was all Laotian and German, but he got to Vietnam and then he started taking classes and being immersed there. He just started to pick up the language, and now he acts in television in Vietnamese.
Well, that's insane. I didn't, because I know like a lot of Vietnamese people, they're so particular and judgy, you know, so you never know. But I just, wow, I'm like shocked.
Trippy, right?
Yeah, that is.
And he goes, the actresses or the actors that he plays opposite of, because he's the villain most times, they are so professional. He goes, I could be speaking in English and they have no idea what I'm saying. And then we just get the emotions across on screen, and the way they cut it and then the way they dub the voice, it all works out. I mean, it's probably like kind of like not perfect the way, you know, like an American production might be, but it works. And you know, that's, to me, it's like, don't let perfection be the enemy of the good, right? Just get it, you know, in the beginning, like this podcast, I just try to get as many stories and things out of people in these very beginning. And, you know, we all improve and we get better at doing what we do. And then it becomes, at some point, I'm fluent in the interview language or the podcast language. And then Lam is fluent in Vietnamese. And if you choose to ever go back to Vietnam, you just become more fluent in that language. It's trippy, right, to think about.
That's so crazy. I guess like he must have been a really good actor that they just wanted to keep him on projects.
He's got a good look.
Language.
Yeah, he's got a good look. Looks like a bad guy, but like a really believable bad guy. Mm-hmm. And probably there's not a whole lot of dialogue. You know, probably not a whole lot of dialogue to go with it all. What are some of your coolest memories growing up in the business so far? Like coolest experience, coolest memories?
Probably the coolest experiences and memories is like obviously meeting like the big celebrities that you'd see on TV. Like when I was working on Extent with Halle Berry, like meeting her was amazing. She was the nicest celebrity I've ever met in my entire life. Like I complimented the phone case that she had because it had like a little strap on it, like a purse. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And she goes, oh, what phone do you have? And I go, oh, I just have an iPhone 5. And then after lunch, she comes back with a new phone case for an iPhone 5 and it's signed inside with her signature.
God.
And she goes, here, like, I know you liked my phone case. So like I had an extra one in my trailer. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, thank you so much. Like, I just didn't know how to react. Like, she was so sweet. And like, that was probably one of the greatest memories I've had with a person. Wow. Working with that.
You wrote
like,
on the inside of the phone case?
Yeah, the inside. So like, it was preserved, you know what I'm saying? Wow. It's not getting rubbed off on the outside. Like, she's done this.
Like, hey, can you think you've signed the backside too? I need to prove to my friends without having to take it out every time.
No, it's crazy. I think that's one of my best memories with like one of the biggest celebrities that I've worked with. She was one of the nicest.
What about like traveling for a show or a project?
I've actually never traveled out of state for a project. I've definitely auditioned for many roles where they're like, oh, filmed in Canada, filmed in Boston. But the furthest I've done was like that Hallmark movie I was talking about.
Yeah.
It filmed in like Simi Valley type of area. So then it was like a consistent job. So I had to stay there every day. So I had to like book a hotel room for like a month. And sometimes I would come home on the weekends when I had my days off. But I was basically living in like a hotel in Simi Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the like craziest, worst memories? Like working, like you ever have any hard, like excruciating times? Like, I don't want to do this anymore.
No. I think like me knowing that acting was for me is that I never really had like the, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. I give up. Like I've always had a drive. I've always had a passion for it. No matter how many times I wouldn't get a call back, an audition back or get that super regular role, I still picked myself up and I was like, I'm going to keep going. Like, I want to do this and I'm determined. I will do this. So I never had a moment where I was like, I hate it. I quit. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired. I'm burnt out. But I've had moments in acting where I would like work with not so nice people, you would say. I think a big difference with major networks like ABC and NBC versus Disney and Nickelodeon shows is that Disney and Nickelodeon shows is that you work with a lot more kids your age. And I think that the parents are probably a little bit more overpowering too, so that they make their child pretty competitive.
Wow.
Yeah. Like the kids get a little competitive on the set. And it, like there's a little rivalry sometimes between like main characters, you know, and
really?
Me being like a guest star co-star, you kind of have to just like see it from the outside. But yeah, sometimes they get a little competitive and you can kind of tell when they don't like each other in real life, but they do put on a good show when the cameras start rolling.
What kind of rivalry stories have you seen?
I've seen and also heard many of them from other acting friends.
What have you heard?
Like, oh my gosh, like this girl went crazy and hated her because her other star had two more lines than her. Or like this girl feels like the camera's more on her other star than her. Like random little things like that, that like they're competing against to be like the star, have more lines, have more airtime, look cuter, just things like that. It's so really random. Weird. But then on like major networks like ABC, NBC, everybody's like a family. Everybody works together. And I think everybody's a lot more mature.
Why is that?
Maybe because there's more adults on set. I think maybe it might level them out because on a like more of a kid show, there's just kids everywhere. So I guess there's bound to be competition against each other, kids your own age.
Yeah.
But with major network shows, they have more of like a balance between like kids and adults and teenagers.
Do you ever do school plays since you started?
In elementary school, they'd had a school play, but I never wanted to audition for the main role. I liked to do like the behind the scenes work. I was on stage crew where we would build and like paint the sets. So I liked that.
But not acting in the plays?
No, I think because I kind of already knew I was into the big thing and the real thing up in LA that I didn't feel the need to have the spotlight in a school play type of thing.
That is so funny.
If that makes sense. Yeah. I kind of wanted to do like on the other side, because when I was working on set, I always liked the props guys, you know, it's like, oh, what kind of like fake salad are you making today for us? I liked looking at that type of side too. So if I like in elementary school, I saw the chance to work, you know, on the other side, I took it. But in middle school, we didn't have school plays really. We had like a drama class elective I was in, and everybody shoved me into the news anchor role that had the most lines, obviously.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was a given, because they're like, I don't want to say all these lines. Cheyenne, why don't you do it? Don't you do acting? And I was like, okay, fine. Because it wasn't anything like real. It was like an elective class.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in high school, they have theater, but it's a big time commitment in high school theater. And I didn't really have that time commitment for it, because I needed to go to LA whenever I needed to.
You already in it. You didn't need to
practice. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, oh, this isn't the real thing, but it's kind of like I'm already going to LA for auditions, and the time and spontaneous auditions that pop up, I can't just leave during a rehearsal, because I'd get yelled at by the teacher or get a D in the class or something, because I need to leave and can't be there for a rehearsal because I have an audition in LA. Like, yeah. It just doesn't work. And the acting is a lot different too.
I can imagine. Yeah. When I think of like the journey, I was in the music thing for like really early in my life, my late teens, early 20s. I did it for a few years, and I began to notice different things about what I had and then what you needed to actually have in order to become successful. For example, as a singer, you have to have a good voice, right? But having a good voice doesn't mean having the best voice. You just need to have some voice that either unique or it just emotes a certain quality, right?
So you have to have, on tune with it.
You have to have a voice. Then you have to have like an intense memory, right? You have to be able to remember lyrics, or if you're a writer, then you have to remember whatever you write. Mm-hmm. Third thing is you have to have like this ability to stay in time and, you know, hit the pockets of the beats and stuff like that. And then you have to have this memory to remember the beats and the way the melodies and everything comes together. So there's like tools that you have to like have, right? Innately, you have to like possess these qualities. Mm-hmm. As an actress, what kind of qualities up to this point do you feel like, you know, somebody coming into the business, would you say, hey, you better have this, 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 and that? Is there anything that you think, is there a list of things that you should have like a minimum of?
It's not like a requirement that you should have, but a lot of agents and casting directors like to look for triple threats. And a triple threat is where you can act, dance, and sing. So a lot of Nickelodeon shows or Disney shows will like just ask for it in general. They wouldn't say like, oh, we want a triple threat, but they'll be like, here is the audition, here's the breakdown, and we want you to bring in an instrument that you can play, or if you can sing or both, that would be great. And then please do this choreography after your script or something like that. But most of the time they'll ask for singing. And so I play the ukulele. So if they ask for singing, I'll bring in my ukulele and I'll play it while I sing. You know, I'll play a song and I'll sing. But it's really like almost like a basic of acting of an actor is where you have to sing, dance, and act, because they just want like, you know, they just want it to be easy. Like, what if we want to write a song into this show? Can this person sing? Mm. Or like, what if we want to do like a dance battle in this show? Can they dance? Things like that.
Those options.
Yeah, they want to be like very well-rounded in multiple talents and arts, because they like to implement that into the script. I see that more in like Disney and Nickelodeon shows. And so like, that's why a lot of the kids that they book, they're very talented, because they are talented in every single aspect that they had to do. They had to be really good at dancing. They had to be really good at singing. And they also had to be really good at acting, because in each episode, they're doing all three.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Pay more if you go over to Nickelodeon and Disney compared to like another show?
That's the thing though. With Nickelodeon and Disney, you don't get paid as much as like a major network as ABC and NBC.
But then they're expecting more from you.
Yeah, exactly.
so ironic.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. You can't really control much about the pay, but I mean, I could be paid like at a Disney rate, and if I'm gonna see you regular, I'd be happy.
Yeah,
You
that
know,
makes sense.
like I don't mind at all.
Yeah, that makes
Yeah.
perfect sense. Are there people in the business right now, like Asian American actresses, that you look up to and that you're like, oh, I want to be going in that direction or path?
I think like one of the big ones that I follow a lot is Lana Condor from To All the Boys I've Loved. I think I look up to her a lot because she's Vietnamese American. Although she was adopted by white parents, she's still full Vietnamese. And I just haven't really seen a full Vietnamese actress get as big as she has. And like, you know, seeing the way that people praise her, like, oh my God, like she's so cute, like I love her, like just things like that. It's like, you know, Asian features are becoming more normalized. It's like not the Eurocentric standards that, you know, that are seen as beautiful. It's like she really brought into perspective, like to people, especially my age, it's like she's so talented and beautiful and nice, and she is close to my age, but that also brings into the example of a 20-year-old playing a teen role. I'm class of 2021. In the third movie that I watched, she's class of 2021. She's a senior in high school, but in real life, Lana Condor is 23.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely look up to her though. I think she's amazing and beautiful, and I love the work that she's in. Like, I would love to play Laura Jean. Like, yeah.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Well, I want to thank you. This has been a very fun time. You know, I've known you for a long time, and I've always wanted to ask you, but you know, we never had the chat. You know, Stefan and I were constantly in and out of the house, and you know, we. You know, there was no never an appropriate time to kind of sit and you know ask these questions. And I ask now, it's strange. I ask from my daughter's perspective because you know Mia's four, and I'm wondering like you know I guess I'm asking from her perspective and then maybe from a parent's perspective, like if she ever decided to go, I just want options, right? I just want to be armed with like knowledge to say,
Yeah.
hey, like me, if you want to go in that direction, you know, here's what you kind of have to be thinking about. Or it's just putting one foot in front of the other. There's no magic, you know, formula. You just have to keep doing it all the time, every time you get a chance, right?
Practice makes perfect. I also think a big thing is that if you don't want to get into acting, if you don't want to do it, you don't want to be a dancer, you don't want to be a singer, don't do it because they will notice. Like they will notice when you act that you don't have that passion, that drive, that ambition. Like they can just tell if you don't want to be in it. And you'll be unhappy yourself for doing something that you don't want to do. You know? So, I mean, that's why a lot of people ask my mom, like, did you force her in it? And my mom's like, no, like that's all her. If she wanted to stop acting, like that would be okay. I'm totally okay with it. And it would honestly make my life a lot less stressful, you know? But I want to do it. So my mom still supports me in doing it. But if I ever wanted to say one day, like, hey, like I think I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore, she'll respect that because you don't want to keep pushing someone and burning someone out because it'll just make things like 30 times worse.
Yeah, art is something that has to come from deep, deep, deep down inside of us. We got to want to do it, and the money's never, it should never be
Yeah.
the goal. I mean, singing, acting, writing, it all has to come from, it all has to be driven from this internal spot that you, it's almost like a lifetime of discovery. Artistry, I feel like, is put into a person's path so they can kind of answer some questions. And the questions sometimes don't really pop up until like as you go through it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Speaking of, when will this podcast be coming out?
I always have a few, but we could talk about it right after we get off the
Okay, because I have a show that I just worked on during COVID, around December, and it's airing next week.
Oh,
It's called,
okay.
yeah, so it's called Side Hustle. It's on Nickelodeon. It'll be airing next Saturday. I think that'll be February 23rd.
Okay, but then we'll figure
Oh
this.
no, February 27th.
Okay, all right. We'll figure this out. Yeah, I'll talk to you a little bit more when we get off the thing, and you know, we'll figure this out. Well,
Okay, yeah.
man, thank you so much. Wait, were you gonna say something?
No, I just wanted to mention how, hold on. I'm just going to look up the time that it airs. Okay, so my Side Hustle episode will be airing February 27th on Saturday on Nick at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Very cool. Very cool.
Good. So that's my next project that will be airing that I just booked.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure and long time in the making. I've always, you know, wanted to work with you in one capacity or another. And, you know, we've talked about other projects throughout the year, and hopefully we'll get around to it after, you know, the COVID thing blows by.
Yes, of course. I'm so excited. This is like my very first podcast. It's a new experience and I love it.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. And I know it's a long, you know, drawn out process, but you know, you shared so much and you're very open with all of the things that I asked, and it's, you know, it's eye opening. And I hope that a lot of people can sort of see through sort of the craft and see through the person. And it's, you know, it's a lot more dedication than what people think.
Yeah. Everybody thinks it's little like sparkles and cupcakes, but then, you know, a lot of people, they like to ask us like, oh, how'd you get into acting? Like my daughter wants to get into it. So we made up this little like startup pack that my mom made in like this like big attachment file. And so we would send it to them and be like, here's everything that we've like compiled together. Anything you need to know, let us know if you have any questions. We would send it to them and no one would respond back with any questions. Because they just didn't realize how much work and time and dedication it takes.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Well, I hope to see much, much more of your work in the future. And, you know, I'm sure I will. From what I'm hearing today, it's just like, this is going to be a long path, and it's a really fun path for you and very fulfilling, it sounds like.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. The Vietnamese is produced by Brittany Tran and Javier Proenza. Special thanks to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trin. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast. You can also find us on YouTube, where you can subscribe, like, and comment. Please rate and give us a review wherever you find our podcasts. Thanks again for listening.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.